Good morning or good afternoon, everyone, and thank you all for holding. Your lines have been placed on a listen-only mode, but during today's conference, you can ask questions by pressing star, then one on your touch-tone phone. Be sure your phone is unmuted, and please state your name at the prompt so we can announce your name prior to you asking your question. Today's call is being recorded. If you have any objections, please disconnect at this time. And I'd like to turn our call over to our first speaker for today, Mr. Omari Wooden. Sir, you may begin.
All right. Thank you very much, and good afternoon, everyone. As stated, my name is Omari Wooden. I am an assistant division chief at the U.S. Census Bureau and the International Trade Management Division. I oversee the areas of trade regulations and trade outreach for the division. We appreciate you attending today's question and answer teleconference, and we hope that this forum will allow you to express your opinions, questions, and concerns regarding the proposed revisions to the foreign trade regulations that were published in the Notice of Proposed Rulemaking on March 9th. For those of you that have not had a chance to review the proposed rule, it can be viewed in its entirety at federalregister.gov, as well as our website as well, which is census.gov/trade. You can also view the webinar we conducted on March 15th, which highlights the proposed changes by clicking on the Outreach tab, also found at census.gov/trade, clicking on Outreach, and then scrolling to the NPRM, Notice of Proposed Rulemaking, webinar, which again was conducted on May 15th. The focus of today's webinar will be us, again, taking your questions and any other details that you need to know or get clarification on regarding these changes to the proposed regulation. So again, I recommend that if you have not listened to the March 15th webinar, you definitely take the time to listen to that webinar where we provide more details on those changes, and then that can allow you to ask specific questions related to the changes in the regulations. Before I get started, I'm going to give a quick statement. Since we have received several questions about one of the changes to the regulations, we're adding a new data element, which is the used electronics indicator. So what I'm going to do is read a brief definition from EPA, Environmental Protection Agency, as to how they define the used electronics indicator, hopefully which will clarify any possible questions. This field is being added to improve information on trade flows on used electronics in order to make sure that they're satisfying the Resource Conservation and Recovery Act, the Planning for Federal Sustainability in the Next Decade, and the National Strategy for Electronic Stewardship. The 2011 National Strategy for Electronic Stewardship directs the federal government agencies to improve information on the exports of used electronics. There's more information that you can find on EPA's website. To get more details on that, you can always go to epa.gov to get more details. The goal of these directives was to improve the availability and quality of data on the trade and handling of used electronics in order to develop and encourage the employment of environmentally sound practices with the respect to disposal of all excess or surplus electronic products in order to reduce the likelihood of negative impacts to the health and environment in developing countries. So again, we're making sure that we're tracking the movement of used electronics around the world to make sure they're either being properly disposed of, to make sure that we are keeping our environment safe. So that is one of the fundamental reasons why this new field is being added. So with that quick introduction, I'd like to now turn it over to you, those of you on the call, that if you have any questions, please feel free to ask now. Operator, at this point, do we have any questions?
Immediately, we have no questions. But if you would like to ask any questions, please press star, then one on your touchtone phone. Be sure your phone is unmuted and state your name at the prompt so we can announce your name prior to you asking your question. Again, please press star, then one on your touchtone phone to ask any questions. And we do have one come through. One moment, please. And I believe the first question comes from Ken. Your line is open.
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes, your line is open. Go ahead, sir.
Thank you very much, and thank you, Omari, for running the webinar today. I just have a top-level general question. The Executive Order 13693 refers to the goals that you mentioned with respect to electronic stewardship, which primarily addresses the agency's disposition of excess or surplus electronic products. Member companies had questions about tracking all of the exports of the used electronics products from industry. So was it the other two acts that you mentioned that incorporate the requirement to track industry exports?
So the other acts are referring, I can actually read out the specifics, are the Resource Conservation and Recovery Act, RCRA, found in 40 USC 6901, and the other one was Planning for Federal Sustainability in the Next Decade, and then the National Strategy for 2011. So this was something that EPA came to us to help them track this type of information, the movements of these types of goods. And these were the citations that they referenced. Is that a concern for you, or is that, because that's more something that I would probably lean to their legal authority on? Did you have a particular question or a concern?
Sure. No, the question was primarily around in the Executive Order 13693, specifically addresses, you know, the federal agency's disposition of all agency excess or surplus electronic products. So, you know, industry had the question of the Federal Register notice and the proposed changes to the foreign trade regulations, adding that used electronics indicator is for all industry. So the question was, where was the basis for this imposition on industry when the specific executive order seems to be addressing just the federal agency's disposition of electronic products?
That is an excellent question, and one that we'll definitely have to direct towards EPA during this comment period. One thing I would also like to recommend for you, if possible, is if you could submit that as a comment through the actual comment process. You can go to our site. Comments are cut off by, I want to say, May 9th. That's the last time we can receive comments to these regulations. So I would actually recommend you submit that as a comment to these regulations, sure, if that's possible. You can also shoot us an email as well.
Okay. We will definitely do that, and I appreciate your response. Just a follow-on question. I know there's been a lot of questions around the definition that was published for used electronics products. And I understand, at the last webinar, there was some mention of proposed changes to that definition.
Yes.
My just general question is that proposed definition trying to then satisfy the disposition of the excess or surplus electronic products? Because as many different individuals and company representatives indicated, it seems to be the definition is going to capture so many things other than, you know, true used or excess or surplus products.
Yes, and this is something that we shared with EPA. We have ongoing conversations with them, conference calls with them, to make sure that the definition that they're intending to capture is truly reflected in the definitions that we're going to put forth in the regulation. So that is something that through the previous webinars and through our conversations that we have definitely suggested EPA make sure they clarified it so that they're truly capturing what they want instead of capturing other things that may now fall into that window based on the definition and the requirements that you're trying to adhere to. So, yes, we have addressed to make sure that they are as crystal clear as possible.
And hopefully you will take industry input on if industry would propose a definition or verbiage for a definition that we believe you're trying to capture. Hopefully that would be taken into consideration.
Absolutely, and that's why we definitely value the comments during this comment period of an NPR, is sometimes we will see, okay, here's the recommendation, and if it's something that meets our needs and meets your needs, absolutely, that's something that we would consider. So, yes. So, I would definitely recommend you submitting a comment, either, again, through email, or you can submit it through the formal process of the public submission.
Okay. Thank you very much, Omar.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. We do have another question, but the name was not recorded. If you did request to ask a question, your line is now open.
Hello, this is George.
Yes, George, please go ahead with your question.
All right, thank you. Hey, Omari, I wanted to ask if, from a practical perspective, will the new indicator be a conditional field in AES ACE?
Good afternoon, George. It will be a conditional field based on the classification number.
Okay.
So I'm not sure of which appendix in the ASTIR, the Automated Export System Trade Interface Requirements, but there's a specific appendix that will list out this classification numbers. If that classification number is reported in AES, then that field will now be required.
Okay, great. Thank you. Yeah, and I apologize if this was covered during the webinar. I'll go back and watch.
Not a problem, sir. Not a problem.
All right, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Again, for questions, please press star, then one on your touch-tone phone. Be sure your phone is unmuted and state your name at the prompt so we can announce your name prior to you asking your question. One moment for the next question, please.
And while we're waiting for that question to come up or as it's being queued up, one other thing to mention as well is there's another revision to the regulations that we want to make sure it's aware. We've heard some feedback from the trade community that's flying a little under the radar, but we want to make sure it's something that we bring to your attention, is the requirement in a routed export transaction for the authorized agent to provide back to the U.S. principal party in interest the date of export and the internal transaction number. One of the conversations that many of the conversations we've had with the trade community, many parties in a routed export transaction have stated, in particular the U.S. principal party in interest, if only I had the date of export or if only I had the internal transaction number, it would at least help me close out my routed export transaction when you, as the U.S. principal party in interest, are not filing. When that agent is filing, this was a piece of information that you all really wanted, thought it would be helpful from a compliance perspective. So that is something that we are proposing in these regulations. I think it will be very helpful, again, dealing with a lot of questions as they relate to routed export transactions, that this will be something that will be very helpful. So we want to make sure a lot of attention has been paid to, obviously, the used electronics, the new original ITN field, the changes including the split shipment requirements, but we also want to make sure that that is known as well as it relates to adding the ITN, internal transaction number, and the date of export as mandatory fields that the agent must provide back in a routed export transaction. So just wanted to make sure I mentioned that. Operator, do we have any questions?
Yes, we do have another question. Next question is from James. Your line is open, sir.
Oh, thank you. I realize that it's a proposal and you're still taking comments, but is there a high-level estimate on when the changes for AES Direct will be in effect, or when you would have a sample data file to reflect how the EDI file will change?
That's a good question. So basically, we've already built the programming into AES, the Automated Export System, and even into the Automated Commercial Environment. So the original ITN field is already built into the system. In a sense, if this rule goes final as is, those fields will just be turned active. But as with any notice of proposed rulemaking going final, we always give the trade community a certain amount of time to change their programming to get ready for the new requirements. The last change, I want to say we gave the trade 180 days, I believe, to incorporate the new changes. So right now, I'm not sure what that time frame is going to be, but we will give the trade community a window of time to change their system, and then be prepared to transmit these new data elements.
All righty. Thank you.
You're welcome.
And, sir, your next question comes from Shelley. Your line is open.
Hi, Omari. The two fields that you just mentioned about adding them, those weren't actually part of the proposed rule, correct?
I'm sorry, say that again? The two fields are, part of the proposed rule.
What you just mentioned a couple minutes ago about adding the ITN to the routed transaction report, that piece of information was not part of the NPR, correct?
Okay, let me clarify. What we are proposing is in a routed export transaction, it's not a new field, it's that the forwarder or the authorized agent will now be required to provide that information back to the U.S. principal party in interest. So it's not a new field. Right now, in a routed export transaction, the authorized agent is only required to provide back the data elements that the USPPI provides. This is a proposal where they will now also have to add. Yes.
That's not my question, though. My question is that part of the proposed rule? I hear you saying
yes.
It.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is.
I'm sorry, because it's been a long time since I read the rule. It was when it first came out. But adding it to the to be available in the file that you provide us through ACE or whatever means, the proposition to include the ITN in the routed data is part of your written proposed rule?
Okay. Now, that's a two-part question there. So the first part is, yes, it's in the requirement. Actually, on the notice of proposed rulemaking, it's on the second page when we talk about revised section.
Yep.
It actually says revised 30.3E2 and then adding the language upon what needs to be provided back. So that's where it's stated. Now, the second part of your question is that will become a secondary effect. It will now be a field that is added in the ACE reports. So the regulations do not state that now this will be added in the ACE reports, but keep in mind the ACE reports are based on the requirements in the regulation. So once this new field is now provided back to you by the agent, it will at the same time simultaneously now be a field that will also be available in the reports.
Okay. And final part of the question, though, is you mentioned ITN, and that is in the proposed rule, but you mentioned perhaps ITN and date of export.
Correct.
And that is date of export in the proposed rule, too, and available for us to comment on? Because I only saw ITN.
Yes. If you're looking at the Federal Register notice on page 12424, it's broken down into three columns. In the middle column, about middle ways down, you're going to see revised 30.3E2. And it says add language requiring the date of export and ITN to be provided to the USPPI upon request.
Got it. Thank you.
Thank you.
And your next question comes from Donna. Your line is open.
Hi. The previous question was my question. Once the authorized agent is required to provide us with the ITN and date of export, will it also be included in the reports that we run in ACE? So that was my question.
All right. Yes, it will be. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yep.
Thank you. Again, if you would like to ask any questions, please press star, then 1 on your touchtone phone. State your name at the prompt.
And again, as we're waiting for questions to be queued up, I'll also take this opportunity to promote our seminar programs, our full-day seminar programs, which we've been running for many years. Again, during these programs, we'll also talk about the existing regulations, the existing requirements, talk about classification. We'll be even demonstrating the new screens in the single window, the automated commercial environment. We always have Customs and Border Protection there, talking about local enforcement issues. And we have a representative from Bureau of Industry and Security talking about dual-use items that have export control classification numbers and what some of those requirements are. So just looking at our schedule, and again, this is found on our website as well. We go to census.gov/trade and then click on Outreach and Compliance Seminars. You'll see that at the beginning of May, we're going to be in Houston, Texas. Actually, that'll be next week. The week after, and then 2 weeks after that, May 18th, we'll be in Seattle, Washington. And then I will be in Philadelphia, June 7th. And then June 21st, we'll be in Baltimore, Maryland. So, again, the complete schedule for the remainder of the year is available on our website for you to come learn more about the existing regulations. We talk about the new regulations and even the transition to the new system as we're moving from the legacy AES Direct to the new single window AES Direct. Operator, do we have any other questions?
We're still waiting for any questions to queue, but again, if you would like to ask any questions, press star, then one. Please be sure to state your name at the prompt so we can announce your name prior to you asking your question.
Okay. So again, I can feel the space of people. But again, just wanted to mention, again, back to the new data elements, the original ITN number was a field that we got based on comments from you all, the trade community, given certain types of export transactions where the cargo had already, in a situation where the cargo had already left the country, but the cargo may have been split after it had already been reported in AES. Some companies were going back in following the regulations, and then they were either receiving a late message, and in some cases, some companies were being penalized for that second shipment. What the original ITN field will do is it will allow you to put in that original ITN number so that if there are any questions from Census or even from Customs as to, hey, you know, well, why did you report this late, or why, you know, this way, this links the new shipment to that original shipment. Hence why it's called the original ITN, or the original internal transaction number. So that's one of the benefits of that field, is at least you can show, okay, here was the original reporting, and now here's the new reporting in case there are any questions regarding that type of transaction.
And, sir, we do have our next question. Next question is from Daisy. Your line is open.
Hi, Omar. I'm calling about 3029 reporting of repairs and replacements. Primarily Section 2 in that regarding ITAR. And there's verbiage in here that says that we are also to report the license value. I'm a little confused on that because normally under returns, they're being re-exported under an exemption, and there is no license value to be reported. Is that going to become a requirement now?
Okay, thank you for your question. What the requirement is intending to do is if it is a ITAR exemption, let's say SOO, license code SOO, and if that is how it is being re-exported, there would not be a license value because it's a State Department exemption. But if on the subsequent export it's going back out on, let's say, a DSP-5, SO-5 license, then in that case, you adhere to our requirements of reporting a repair value, but then you would also then have to report a license value if there is a license value. So if it is exempt on the export, you do not have to report a license value.
Okay, okay. Just wanted a little clarification on that. I do have a second question that kind of links to this one, and that is on Section 3053.
Okay.
Requiring the statement imported for repair and re-export on the CBP Form 7501. There are times when our importer doesn't know if the goods are going to be repaired or if they're going to have to be replaced until they've gone into testing.
Okay.
So how does that affect the placement of that statement on the 7501? When we don't know if it's going to be repaired and re-exported or if it's going to be replaced and re-exported.
Okay, so on the importation, you don't know how it's going to be handled, in a sense.
Correct.
Inside the U.S., and how should that be noted? Unfortunately, as that's an import requirement, even though it is found in our regulations, I don't have a specific answer for you on that. If possible, could you shoot me an email or send an email to the regulations branch on that, and we can get you in touch with someone at CBP on the import side that can probably give you better guidance on that.
Okay, and see if I have an email address. I'm not 100% sure. I was forwarded the link for that.
Well, I'll give you my email address.
Okay.
It's Omari, O-M-A-R-I, dot S, like Safari, dot Wooden, W-O-O-D-E-N, at census, C-E-N-S-U-S, dot G-O-V. So if you send me that question, I can at least try and get you in touch with someone on the import side that may have a better perspective on your question.
Very good. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. And your next question comes from Krissa. Your line is open.
Hi, Omari. Thank you for having this opportunity to talk with you guys. My question isn't really related to one specific proposed rule just yet, but in the AES, I was wondering if there is any way for, so we don't self-file, but our freight forwarders filing for us on our behalf, for them to document our internal reference number in the AES system so that we're not so reliant on our freight forwarder to link our data with our export data with census data, let's say.
Okay, so let me clarify, understand your question. You're saying that you file, who files the record?
Our freight forwarder files on our behalf.
Okay, so the forwarder is filing the record, and you're asking if, what can be linked up now?
If there is a place where they can put our internal, like, sales order number or whatever our internal SAP number is into AES, like, you know, when you have a freight forwarder file on your behalf, they have their own internal reference number.
Right.
And they capture that because they're the one filing it with you guys. But
correct.
When we pull ACE data, I still have to now go and get a report from my freight forwarder and link the two reports before I can go and reference my system.
Oh, okay. I don't know if that's something that has been in development. I know one of the things, this isn't answering your question, but the manifest, the automated manifest, is eventually planning to overlay the transportation data to overlay with the commodity data. So as you provide your commodity details, the manifest will then overlay the actual transportation documents or the transportation details. But in that example, I'm not sure. We haven't had much talks about pulling the information from your system and then linking it with their system and then also then showing your number, because it's ultimately the filer that is their unique identifier to pull up the shipment.
Right.
But I understand your question, because if you have shipment 123, but your forwarder uses 456, when you go look it up, you're not going to find it under 123. You're going to find it under 456 because they filed the data.
Right.
Right.
It still makes us very dependent on them, no matter what.
Right. I'll note that. I'm actually going to write that down, and I'll just see, have there been any talks about that? We work with the CBP developers, obviously, throughout this transition. Have there been any discussions about any options about how that could be handled? Because as of right now, we have not had that discussion.
Oh, that would be fantastic. Thank you so much.
Okay. Thank you. You're welcome. Thank you.
Thank you again. If you would like to ask any questions, please press star, then one on your touchtone phone. Be sure your phone is unmuted and state your name at the prompt so we can announce your name prior to you asking your question. One moment for the next question, please.
And again, as I mentioned earlier, the things that we've been discussing today regarding the different webinars and the different information, we have a lot of information, so I already discussed the seminars, but we also have webinars that we record and that we have stored online, giving a wide range of topics, even webinars that we've done in the past. We did a webinar series, I believe, last year, where it was called International Trade University Webinar Series, where we focused on specific topics. One topic, we specifically focused on standard and routed export transactions. Another was your responsibilities in an export transaction. How do you file? Live classifications. Again, all of those webinars are still stored on our website free of charge for you to access and refer to at any time. So if you yourself missed it, or if you have a staff person that may find the information valuable, the information is still available on our website.
Thank you, sir. Your next question comes from Daisy. Your line is open.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Mr. Wooden. This is in reference to Section 30.36, exception for shipments destined to Canada. So are we going to be required now to file for a license for Canada?
For a license shipments going to Canada?
Correct. Do we have to file the AES for any Canada does not need a license from the Department of Commerce.
So okay,
we will have certain shipments that are going to Canada but destined for an end user outside of Canada that may require a license.
Right, okay. So the question is, if a shipment, one, going to Canada, that requires some type of license or has certain controls as found in 30.2A1IV of our regulations, if it meets one of those requirements, if it is destined to Canada, it still requires to be reported. So if it is licensed by a government agency and going to Canada, it's required to be reported, even though the destination is Canada. Now, if you have a shipment that is going through Canada destined somewhere else, that would still be a shipment destined to, quote-unquote, somewhere else. So, for example, if you've got a shipment ultimately destined to Germany, but it goes through Canada, it's loaded on a vessel in Halifax to go to Germany, well, that is a shipment that's destined to Germany. That would have to be reported.
Okay. Okay. Very good. Well, thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Your next question comes from Cheryl. Your line is open. Cheryl, your line is open.
Oh, I'm sorry. I had it on mute. Where do we go to look at that March 15th webinar?
Okay, if you go to census.gov/trade, that'll take you to the our division's main page. From there, at the top, you'll see different tabs. If you click on the Outreach tab, that'll take you to our Outreach and Education and Training section. Then from there, if you scroll down under the blue header, it'll say Foreign Trade Regulations. You'll see Notice of Proposed Rulemaking, date March 15th, and then you can click on it says Access FTR Webinar Recording.
Perfect. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you.
And your next question comes from Dan. Your line is open.
Hi, Omari. This is Dan. I had a follow-up question about your original ITN number that was mentioned earlier in the call. You had mentioned that an ITN, original ITN number is going to be necessary in the proposal due to split shipments. Could you elaborate on that a little more? If after you submit an AAS filing and the shipment is split, is there another ITN number that is required? I'm not clear on the split shipment issue that you had mentioned.
Okay, and I apologize if I use the incorrect term, because split shipments in our regulations means a certain thing, and what I was describing was referring to something else. So I apologize to you and anyone else for using those terms kind of interchangeably. So an example that I was using is, let's say you have goods that are destined to go to consignee A, destined to leave the country on Friday. You file your AES record, you get an internal confirmation number with your date of export Friday. The goods leave the country on Friday, still destined to the consignee number A, let's say in Germany. But let's say on Sunday, you've already reported the AES, your date of export was Friday. Let's say on Sunday, the person in Germany says, you know what, I don't want all 10 of these products. At the last minute, I changed my mind. I only want 2. So number one, you would have to go back into AES, make the correction, because only two of those products are going to that German consignee. But let's say now the goods are still outside of the United States. You happen to find another buyer, let's say in Brazil, for the remaining eight, whatever, the eight pieces of whatever you're exporting. So based on the regulations, you would be required to file a new shipment referencing those eight items that are now going to Brazil. And what will happen is, in many cases, companies were getting a compliance alert showing the shipment was reported late because the system never saw this movement to Brazil. What the original ITN allows you to do in the shipment to Brazil, you can reference the original shipment where all 10 were originally destined to go to Germany. So now what you'll have filed in AES will be two of this particular product going to Germany with ITN number one. You'll now have another shipment with the eight products going to the consignee in Brazil with ITN number two. But in the ITN number two shipment, you can reference ITN number one to show this is how this shipment came about. Does that clarify your question?
Yes, thank you, 100%. Appreciate it.
Okay. And operators are waiting for the next question to come up. And then to reference the split shipment part, the split shipment is when the goods are split by the carrier prior to exportation. So if you've got 10 containers going to the port of export, but let's say only 10 containers get on the rail today and the other six get on the rail tomorrow. Well, that's what we're talking about when we talk about the term split shipment. It's when it's split inside of the United States before the goods are exported. So, again, I hope that clarified that scenario as I was using the terms kind of interchangeably, which I should not have been.
Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you.
And your next question comes from Anna Kreider. Your line is open.
Thank you, Mr. Wooden and staff. I have a question. I'm bringing in products from Africa into California to export to Asia, and I'm using freight forwarders. Is this system that you have mandatory for me to use in addition to whatever the freight forwarders are reporting, or can I rely on my freight forwarders to do this for me?
Okay. Now, this question is a little outside of the scope of today's discussion, but the key is what your forwarders or your authorized agents should be doing is if these goods were formally cleared from Africa into California, now from California to Asia, if they were formally cleared on the import side, when they now leave the United States, they would then have to report an automated export system record. Your agents should be adhering to the regulations and reporting a record in AES. So to say that, I don't know what they're doing. You just say what your forwarders are doing. I don't know what they're doing. So
okay.
They would be required to report an automated export system record.
Okay, that's what I needed to know, if there had to be, if that was part of the requirements in the new order.
That has always been a requirement. Anything that is formally imported and then exported out of the country has to be reported in the automated export system, assuming it's above $2,500 per the classification number. And, again, it has to be imported. There are goods that move in transit through the United States, which may not need to be reported. So, again, that's why I stated if it's formally cleared on the import side, then it needs to be reported on the export side.
Thank you, sir.
All right, you're welcome.
Thank you. And your next question is from Carol. Your line is open.
Good afternoon.
Yes, ma'am, your line is open. Go ahead with your question.
This is Cheryl. Maybe it came through as Carol, but Omari, this is Cheryl from Taminco. Glad you're doing this call. Just to clarify on the ITN on the split shipments, the original ITN being added, you would still possibly need to do it on the split shipment because we sometimes don't know from a carrier if a split actually happens and it doesn't make the original intended vessel at the port of discharge. Is that correct, part of my understanding there?
Okay, so definition of a split shipment to answer your question, for the vessel environment, if the vessel carrier says, okay, we can only take 6 out of your 10 containers today, and we're going to have to roll it to another ship. In the vessel environment, unless they get on another ship within 24 hours, then yes, you would have to file another shipment. So let's say 6 get on today, but the next vessel for your movement is on Friday. Well, that's outside of the 24-hour window, which means you would have to file a new shipment, and that would not be the original ITN. You would just be filing a new amended shipment.
Okay.
Now, in the other modes of transportation, air, truck, and rail, their window is 7 days. So if it got on a rail carrier today and then it got on a rail carrier Friday, well, that's still within the 7-day window. You would not have to go back in and make that correction.
Okay. So you'd basically, in the case where a vessel splits and it doesn't make it on 24-hour vessel, you're going to be doing an original filing with all 10 containers, but the last container that doesn't make it, you're going to do a new filing prior to that new sale date, and you're going to amend that original ITN to reduce it by one container.
Right, if that's your example. So let's say we've got 10 that are destined to go out today, but only 9 make it and one has to roll over to another one. Right, you have to go back in, correct your first shipment to show 9, then you would have to file another shipment representing that one with the new date of export.
And you would not put the original ITN on that second one because it would
that
just
is
be
correct.
Separate.
That would just be a separate shipment. Yep.
That's the point. Okay.
Yep.
Thank you, sir. And your next question comes from Daisy. Your line is open.
Hi, Omari. Okay, so we're talking about split shipments and original ITNs.
Yes.
And I have a question. So I issue a house bill for 10 containers to Beijing. The carrier decides they can only load 6. My next sailing isn't for 3 days, so the other 4 are going then. So I understand that I have to file a second AES filing for the 4 containers that didn't move originally as planned, and I have to amend the filing for the 6 containers that did move to show that only 6 moved. My question has to do with the SRN. Clearly states that SRN numbers cannot be duplicated.
Correct.
I've issued one house bill for 10 containers. My SRN is my house bill number. How do we do that? Because
you
I'm still only going to have one house bill in China.
Right. Now, you will have to create another shipment reference number because that's the requirement of the reporting for electronic export information. We don't mandate house bills and what's required to be moving with the cargo. So that may also be a question for customs at the port of export and how do they want to see that, because if they've got house bills and they were split, how would customs want to see that? Because as for terms of the AES, if you file shipment 1, 2, 3 and now it's split like this, you're going to have to create another shipment number that's not 1, 2, 3.
Correct. So we have to ask customs how to do this?
My recommendation is to see how, because your question is back to the house bill. What I'm discussing
Correct.
Is what's required to be reported in AES and the regular.
Right. Actually, my question is on the SRN number, which says it cannot be duplicated.
Right.
And in our particular program, and I know a lot of other forwarders are probably using a similar program to what we are, our SRN number happens to be what we consider our house bill number. So now I've got a shipment that's been split on my SRN. How do we file that second AES filing for the cargo that was left behind?
You're going to have to create another shipment reference number. 123A, 123-1. You're going to have to create another shipment reference number.
So this is something I'm going to have to take up with my IT people, and they're going to have to talk to the software developers on how they're going to do that.
That's
because
what it sounds
currently,
like.
Currently, there's no way to do that
okay.
in the system. And that's what I wanted to know.
Right.
Need program change. Okay.
All right.
All right, great. Thank you.
All right, thank you.
Thank you. And your next question is from George. Your line is open.
Hi, Omari and Daisy. This is more of a comment than a question. I was just going to say that one way of creating a unique XTN or shipment reference number would be to incorporate the date along with the waybill number. So you have at least unique for that day, and then you could add alpha characters if you were, creating additional filings under that same waybill on the same day. It's for A, B, or C, but it sounded like Omari covered most of it, but that's all I had.
Thanks, George. Appreciate it.
Thank you. And your next question is from Dee. Your line is open.
Hi, Omari. So last week we had a conference with some CBP folks and biz and that sort of thing here in Cedar Rapids, and we were advised when there was a split shipment that we're supposed to use a slash S, like the letter SAM, behind the ITN, so that will advise customs that, that there is a split shipment. I don't know if that's a true statement, but we were advised by an actual customs agent out of Chicago to do that.
There's nothing in the regulations that says to put slash S or anything like that. So I can really only stand on what the regulations state as to how you report a split shipment. I'm actually looking at it. Now, what I'll see in many cases, I'm looking at the regulations now, 30.28 under split shipments. It talks about notating on your documentation 3 of 10, that, but it doesn't mention to put something behind the ITN. So that's actually something new.
Okay. I'll go back and advise my folks. I have about 60-some-odd people that file ACE for us today, so
okay.
I put it out there in case they had split shipments, and it happens very rarely for our company, but I'll retract that statement to the rest of the filers.
Yeah, and if you have a more detailed question on that, feel free to shoot me an email.
Okay.
Because, like I said, that sounds like something that's happening at that specific port, but because that is not something that I see in our regulations. So that's the first time I'm hearing that as well.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Thank you.
Thank you. Again, if you would like to ask any questions, please press star, then one on your touchtone phone.
And since we've been talking about and it looks like we have about 10 more minutes on the call today, since we've been talking about the split shipments and that requirement, one of the things that's happening in this regulation is all the split shipment requirement is now being added to the regulations. The split shipment requirement, once we released our previous regulations, changed almost immediately after we released the regulations. So those requirements are found in Foreign Trade Regulations letter number 6. So what these regulations are doing is basically moving those requirements that set next to the regulations in an FTR letter. We're just now bringing those into the regulations. So the requirements haven't changed. It's just that now we're incorporating them into these regulations.
Thank you. Again, if you would like to ask any questions, press star, then one on your touchtone phone.
Okay. Sounds like.
Yep, I am showing no questions at this time, sir.
Okay. So just as a closing, thank you, everyone, for being on today's call. Again, I'd like to remind everyone to go to census.gov/trade, click on the outreach tab, and then you can access the webinar where we, again, get into the discussion of all the different changes that are going on in this notice of proposed rulemaking. So some of the things that maybe we discussed today you weren't aware of, or maybe another question that came up you weren't aware of, make sure you go back, check out that previous webinar, and you may be able to find some more details on that. Again, feel free to give us a call. You can call our 1-800 number and directly connect to our regulation staff. The number is 1-800-549-0595, and then select option number 3. So if, again, if you have more questions, or if you're interested in submitting a comment and you just have some questions about submitting a comment, feel free to call the 1-800 number. Again, 1-800-549-0595, option number 3, and the trade regulation staff can assist you with any questions that you have. Again, thank you. If you all have any questions in the future, please feel free to reach out and let us know. Thank you again today for your time.
Thank you. This ends today's conference call. You may disconnect at this time. Have a good day.